Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Fantasy Focus Football. They tape every morning, Monday through Friday, live on Twitter. Be sure to check it out if you're interested in the very best analysis in the game, or you're just ashamed of how you did last year in your own league. You can download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about the life in the bubble. Well, I'm a little excited about Hard Knocks and y'all stories about having to run up on somebody to get your money. But first... All right, so as of this recording, I just want to make sure you guys know what time it is. It is 11:33 and 48 seconds here as we are recording this. As of this time, the Big Ten's meeting of, I think it's presidents, that was at 10:30 Eastern time. We have not gotten the news out of that as to whether or not the Big Ten is going to cancel the season. My guess is that they are going to cancel the season, or at the very least, they're going to try to push it into the spring, right? I'm trying to give you a podcast that'll still be useful after it comes out, but is still like relevant. So I'm operating under the assumption that the Big Ten is going to cancel this year. Like, I think we've had enough kind of decent reporting from people who tend to know some things to say that it's going to happen. I've talked to somebody who's got a pretty decent idea of what's going on and told me that this had happened and that the vote was 12-2. Like this, it feels like this decision has already been made and now they just kind of coming out here and talking to people about it. So a thing that has come up in talking about what to do with football among the folks that make these decisions is a condition called, I want to make sure I pronounce it right. I think it's myocarditis. And what it is a viral infection. Yeah, myocarditis. And it is a viral infection, an inflammation of the heart muscle. And so what's happened is 5 different players in the Big Ten are athletes. I don't know what sports, but 5 different athletes in the Big Ten have contracted it. And other athletes at other conferences have also had it. It appears, because we got to remember, we don't really know that much about the Rona. We're still figuring things out. It appears that there's a higher incidence of this inflammation of the heart with the Rona than than usual with viruses. And viruses can generally cause this. If this is what I think it is, I had a buddy of mine, man, this almost took him out. Like, he came home and wasn't feeling well and went to the hospital, and they had to cut him open in order to get it right to deal with the inflammation. Like, once they dealt with it and got the virus, you know, got the antibiotics in or whatever, he was good. But like, this is a thing, and this apparently is stopping administrators in the Big Ten and in the Pac-12 cold. That's the one that they're looking at. Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't really know why this particular heart condition would be the one to get people, unless this is the thing that they're most afraid of could wind up killing somebody, or it creates a recognition that the cost of dealing with people who test positive and also are playing the sport have just gotten a lot higher, because now you're going to have to do MRIs on people's hearts in order to do this. Okay. To me, the most underrated factor in discussing whether or not there's going to be a college football season, who can and cannot play, is that these tests aren't free. All right. These tests cost money, and that's a big deal. And like, think about this for a second, right? The first conference to decide they weren't going to play football this fall was the Ivy League. And everybody could point to them and be like, they so hoity-toity, of course they would make such a declaration. Okay, cool. The next two were the SWAC and the MEAC. And those are the two HBCUs, conferences of HBCUs in Division I. I'm here to tell you right now, man, they ain't got the money to do all that testing. Not the testing that's required in order to keep this safe. They ain't got it. Simple as that. Like, I don't think that the reason that the SWAC and the MEAC decided not to do this is because they were putting safety first nearly as much as they ain't got it, right? And we've seen this come up. UConn, a program that doesn't have it. They're like, yeah, no, man, we're not going to participate in this. Like, it is going to be really expensive for them to safely engage in college football. And so I don't think it's really a coincidence that, like, the guys at Clemson are telling the world, we feel perfectly safe here, right? Or the guys at Ohio State say, hey, guys, we feel perfectly safe here. I bet you do feel safe there, man. Y'all got bread. You go talk to some of these schools off the beaten path. Go ask them about the ways that they're being tested, right? Go see how that goes. Let me ask you this. Would you be 100% positive given the profit motives that are at play? Would you be 100% positive if you played on one of these teams that every test you took was a real test? Yeah, they can come swab you and say they gonna go test it. They come back and tell you that you're negative. How you know? Like, really, how would you know? You don't. Like, the everything is so built for levels of frightening corruption that I just don't see how it is that you can think is responsible to play these guys. And so within these conferences, even if you're at Ohio State and they're doing everything 100% right, you are as vulnerable as the most vulnerable team on your schedule. And not every school can afford to do this right. They just can't. There's no other way to put it. They can't afford it. And we don't talk about that nearly enough because all we get into is, hey, the players say they want to play, they should play. At least that's the thing that just popped up. People ain't never listened to what the hell the players ever wanted before. People who didn't listen when the players said a couple weeks ago that they want some money in order to do this. No. They didn't listen to none of them under those circumstances. But they decide they want to play. Well, you want to listen to them when they want to get paid. You don't want to listen when they want to play. Because I have not been convinced that it's safe for them to play. No, I am not just saying that because they're between 18, 22, 23 years old, whatever it is, and they decide that they don't care about the risk, that we should let them not care about the risk. No. Like, I'll be honest with you in large part about the way that I view my job. I think that it is imperative on those of us who cover college sports to view the players in a protective way because nobody else is, right? Like, I think the things that we report on, I think the things that we try to find out, the perspectives that we take, that we need to consider what the limitations are of the players. And we need to consider the fact that somebody's got to look out for them. Somebody has to. And it is literally nobody's job to do so. And I feel like in doing our job properly, we then do wind up looking out for the players. Like, if we are being sincerely honest about the systems that we are observing and the things that are going on, then we wind up doing a favor for them. But we have to be honest, and we have to, like, I think it is our responsibility within our job to consider what the power imbalance is and have a legitimate level of concern for what goes on with the players, right? Like, I think it is wildly irresponsible to cover this and then just say, well, just let the players sign a waiver so they can come out here. One of the things the players in the Pac-12 talked about, they put out a press release about this, that when they talked to Larry Scott, which apparently went disastrously, one thing that came up was allowing guys to have representation to, you know, to check out any waiver that you put in front of them. And the NCAA didn't want that. Like, that's the thing you got to keep in mind and remember about the NCAA in this. They don't operate with good intentions as it relates to the players. I don't even think they operate with bad intentions. They just don't care what happens to them. You know what I mean? Like, they operate on the what is best for us, and they got a power dynamic that allows them to do whatever they want in order to keep up with what's best for them. And that's problematic, right? And so the idea that you're just like, well, if the players want to play, just let them play. Come on, man. You know it's not that simple. And I don't think that anybody would say that about something that they did not ultimately want to watch. You know, now the water's a little bit muddy on this because of the fact that these colleges are letting all these other students come on campus. And I think that's a bad idea too, right? Like, I know there are no easy answers for this. And I know that the money situation is very real for a lot of people in trying to figure this out, right? And that's just not just the institutions, right? like people that own little businesses in the college towns and everything else. Like, I get that this is all really, really difficult. And it's more difficult than it should be because we as a nation did worse than literally everybody else in the world at dealing with this. I just saw a story today where in New Zealand, they got three cases. Now, granted, New Zealand ain't got so many people. They got three cases and they locked the whole thing down. They're like, nah, man, we ain't doing this. Now, I don't know if you necessarily need to go to the lengths that they're going to, but we as a nation have done a terrible job of this. If the nation had done a better job, then we wouldn't be having these problems, right? Like, this isn't the fault of the administrators. This isn't the fault of the coaches. This isn't the fault of the players, whatever it is, right? It's not. But this is where we are. This is where we stand. And with a virus where we don't know the long-term effects it's going to have on people, I just don't think it's safe to have football players or any of these other athletes out here. Because here's the thing I don't also don't feel like people are talking about. So if, like, forget about the myocarditis for a second, right? As we talk about, we don't know what the long-term health effects are of the virus. Do we really know if after you have contracted the virus, whether or not you, like, how long should it be before you play? Like, just because you're symptom-free, does that mean right now that you should be playing? I don't have the answer for that. And the presidents don't have the answer for that. And the doctors don't have the answer for that. And that's why these presidents are like, nah, man, we can't do this. This is a liability issue as much as anything else for them. I ain't giving anybody any credit in this for caring about the players because nobody ever has, right? But I do think that for these presidents, they look up and they're like, yo, I'm really not trying to have a disaster on this front on my name. I'm not, right? It's not, I don't think it's a coincidence that the two conferences that most would probably say have the highest academic reputation, like the ACC is, like Big Ten is number one. The ACC and Pac-12, I feel like, are right around the same place. It's just the ACC, like the bottom end of that is a little different. Well, Pac-12, yeah. Either way, I think they're kind of comparable, but the Pac-12 views itself in a very hoity-toity way in that sense. And I don't think it's a coincidence that those are the two conferences that are the most apprehensive given the way that they consider their own academic reputations. And so I mentioned that on Twitter, and Adam Rittenberg does good work at ESPN, made the point that every university president thinks they're going to work at an Ivy or Stanford, or that's where they want to work. I'm like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but not every university president is serving the same base. They not serving the same board. Like, I could be wrong about this, but there is no equivalent of Paul Bryant Jr., Bear Bryant's son, who's on the board and basically runs things at Alabama, at the University of Alabama. I don't feel like that person is on the board at Stanford. I could be wrong, but like, I don't feel like that. I mean, maybe Phil Knight's that person on the board at Oregon. I really don't know who's on the board there, but I think you get my point. They serve different people, man. They serve different states. They serve different constituencies. And I think it's a little easier for them to make this play. The Big 12, I have no idea what they're ultimately going to do, in part because I know most of that conference, you're never going to be able to explain to me how they're going to be able to afford it. Like, how exactly Kansas State, Iowa State, they can't afford this. I just don't see how they can. And the liability issue is too much for them. And so they're not going to have a football season because there's a potential they might have to pay out the nose on the back end. And what's so hilarious to me is that people are referring to that as being cowardice. What are you talking about? There's nothing cowardly about that. It's a terrible play for the presidents. And you could say, well, everybody should have had a plan in place in order to get this done before. And they're saying that there is no leadership. I get the argument that there is no leadership. Sort of. I think we have to consider the fact that the position that the leaders are in that is worth thinking about is that there is no good answer for this because everything we're talking about now with what the test results are and what they are at this school and how many da-da-da and everything else, people haven't started bumping into each other yet. Like, this is all fun and games until teams play against each other. And that's where everything gets to be so uncertain once the people start bumping into each other. And I understand the financial circumstances that we're under that make people say, well, we just got to figure out if we're going to do it. But that's easy to say with somebody else's body. Like, this could have potentially devastating health effects, not just for the players, but also for the communities in which they live, for the coaching staffs, all these things. And so I understand if you want college football, and I understand even to a degree if you want to go to some libertarian outlook and say that the guys want to play, therefore they should play. I get where you're coming from. But stop acting like you don't understand why somebody might hold up on this. Steve Sipple, who covers Nebraska sports and has for a while, long as I can remember, to be honest, he wrote a column where he's talking about why it is that Nebraska football, you know, should go on, because Nebraska's talking about if the Big Ten cancels everything, we'll just still play people. And he keeps talking, and he mentioned the negatives of not playing. He mentioned the positives of playing, but never in the column did I feel like he mentioned the negatives of playing. Like, what could go terribly wrong if they did play? It never felt like he mentioned that. And I just found that to be so bananas that people could be so caught up in this idea of really as football is cultural thing. Like, look, man, when the players, yeah, the we want to play, and it was looked like was versus We Are United, and then they kind of sort of form like Voltron, and I still need to talk to some more people about that. But that thing did happen. But when it was just We Want to Play, hashtag, other than Justin Fields, and I'm not saying he's the only person, you get what I'm saying. I'm saying he's the only one, but it just looked like a bunch of white dudes that was sending the tweets out and a bunch of white dudes that was retweeting it. And when you started looking on the timelines of the people that were all the way down on the We Want to Play, it was them folks that tweet like bots. Like, it was this obvious and stark racial difference that we saw. We also saw heavily that the We Want to Play was coming from the biggest programs, the people that had the most gain in this. They were the ones that were saying this. Like, none of it felt organic. Like, people were hitting me and they were just like, yeah, you know, why don't you want to let these guys say what they feel? I'm like, they can say what they feel. I'm not at all saying that they should be quiet. I'm just saying something about this don't feel right. And it didn't feel right. And it was impossible to ignore how politicized the idea of playing college football has gotten. The politicians who are on the internet saying the most about wanting them to play college football, it's all Republicans. Right? The people, the players that are pushing this the hardest are the white dudes. The people that are supporting them on the internet the toughest, it's the white dudes. I don't have any answer for you as to why this is, but it's also impossible to ignore when talking about all of this. And I just don't see how you can look at this and not understand how a university president says what I think this really kind of all comes down to, which is, if you're the president of this university, what's your answer for when a player dies? What's your plan and what's your answer? And if you don't have a great one for either scenario, then y'all can't play. As simple as that. And if you can't understand why a university president would make that decision without that person being a coward, I just think you're full of period. All right, man. The bubble, it seems, is starting to get a wee bit contentious. I forget which report it was. I think it was Woj. I thought I saw him do a story about how the league is starting to worry now about, like, when the playoffs come around and you might wind up with two teams who stay in the same hotel playing against each other in a series. Yeah, you know how the elevator rides might get a little bit dicey and all that stuff like that if that goes down. Like, this, again, this is the part of the bubble that I don't feel like enough people have properly considered, which is, these dudes don't feel like being around each other all the damn time, right? These cats don't typically hang out with all of each other. They hang out a little bit with the dudes on the team. Now they ain't got nobody to kick it with but either the dudes on the team, whom they might not like very much, or the dudes on the other team, who they might have liked before they showed up, and then may not like that much down the line. Hell, in fact, I guess that same thing's going to kind of sort of apply to them with the people that are actually on their own teams. Here for it. Totally, totally, totally here for it. See, this is something I also think that we need to give a little bit more consideration to, right? You may have seen the thing that happened over the weekend with the Astros and the A's, where the dude for the A's wanted to go pretend like he wanted to fight the whole team. He obviously did not want to fight the whole team because it only took one man to take him down, and he saw the man coming, and he ain't try to swing on him at first, right? I'll never forget something. My homeboy, he used to play college football. And he told me that he wound up getting beat down by an offensive tackle who ultimately had a fairly significant career in the NFL. And he said he decided after that, he was never going to get hit first again. Like, that was the lesson that he learned. That the second he felt like he was about to jump off, he was going to wind up swinging. There was no dignity in waiting on somebody to hit you first, right? That was where he was coming from on that. I feel like whatever that dude's name, I think it was Laureano. Like, once you decided you were going to run up on the whole squad, first dude that come, if you're really trying to fight, you swinging at him. What was my man's name? Was it Amir Johnson? It was Amir something. That lanky dude, brother that played for the Reds, when he decided he was going to run up on the whole team, he decided he was going to run up on the whole team. Like, he was prepared. That was a man that was ready to fight. Anyway, one of the things that came down to it with that fight, and everybody looked at it, and where Major League Baseball truly has to consider this, is that they got all their COVID situations, and they trying to practice all these various levels of social distancing, and they don't exist with no bubble. Therefore, you just can't be running into the whole squad like that. That's a great way for everybody to catch it, right? Or you to go over there, catch it, because you don't know the Astros got it yet. Come back over to your squad. Now your whole squad going to get it, right? Like, that's what they're trying to avoid in this. The beauty of the NBA bubble is they should be able to fight without having to worry about dying. Like, if you ain't going to catch the cooties, I'm kind of encouraging this. I don't know who the people are that's around with some kind of cameras. I'm sure TMZ got some kind of moles that's up in the spot one way or another. I'm down to see some cats scrap it out by the pool. Why not? I'm down to see some cats scrap it out in the pool. I'm down to see some, like, sanctioned fights where y'all just make the decision. Hey, man, after the game, why don't we just take it back to the hotel? Scrap it out. I'm down. I think this could be excellent. Guys start showing up to games with black eyes and don't have no answer. Oh, yeah, in practice, I took an unfortunate elbow. Yeah. Tough break. Whew. Come on, man, make it happen. Did y'all see that thing with Dame Lillard was going back with the dudes on the Clippers? Right? Missed some shots late. Patrick Beverley, who is just here to troll, right? Like, we know that Patrick Beverley's here to troll. Patrick Beverley is simply here to troll. Dame Lillard missed that shot late. Patrick Beverley did the wave thing. Apparently, Paul George has something to say. Dame Lillard just said, oh, no, nah, man, you know, I've done it to those dudes before. The whole reason that they acted the way that they did is they just as surprised as I was that I didn't make those shots. They actually showing me the height of respect. That is Dame Lillard, number one, being 100% correct, right? That is a great way to respond in that circumstance. Now, of course, Dame absolutely had the option to be like, hey, man, sometimes you make it, sometimes you don't. I ain't even stunting those dudes. Dame is absolutely stunting those dudes. There ain't no way around that. He absolutely cares about what it is and them dudes had to say. He was salty. I would be salty under the same circumstances. He can't pretend like he's not salty, right? He can elevate himself under the circumstances, but he's elevating himself because of the salt that's in his soul. He's salty. I don't blame him for being salty, but he's salty. That being said, I applaud his response because Dame is like, I may have took an L on the court. I don't know why you feel like I got to take an L from y'all. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, I missed those shots. You thought I was going to make those shots too. That is a man that is not here for taking L's. And let me tell you something. Neither am I. I was talking to Pablo about this once, and I've talked about it with this with you guys before, that, like, my whole goal when playing basketball was very simple. I ain't out here to get dunked on. Ain't no circumstance under which me getting dunked on is something that we gonna find appropriate, right? That ain't how we do it where I'm from. I ain't here for that, right? Do whatever it takes to not get dunked on. Pablo said he felt like that was my mission for my entire life. And I'm like, yeah, kind of. Now, granted, most of y'all can't jump high enough to dunk on me, so it don't really come up. But yeah, no, that's kind of what it is. I'm with Dame on that one. Like, oh, you think you got me? No, you didn't. Come on, dog. I'm me and I'm you. Well, I'm me and you're you. I can't be me and be you at the same time. I wouldn't even want to be you, but let me start that over. I'm me and you're you. There we go. Got it right. Woo! Good job, me. All right. But that's where we are now with this NBA bubble. I got questions for anybody. Like, I'm very curious how anybody thinks about this, feels about this, whatever it is. I still have not, like, gotten into, like, shape when it comes to the NBA. And what I mean when I say that I ain't really gotten into shape when it comes to talking about the NBA is I don't know what any of this is supposed to feel like. And what I'm saying is they took 4 months off, right? Four closer to five. They took 4 months off. That's an entire offseason. Like, it's hard for me to think of these teams as being the same teams that they were before. It is. So, like, for example, Portland comes back, and now they got Nurkic. It's hard for me to think of that as being the same team. Like, a lesser thing, of course, is, like, the Lakers come back, and they don't have, like, Avery Bradley. Not that big a deal, but it is a thing, right? Somebody else had one where I was like, Oklahoma City, Andre Robinson, who hadn't played in, like, damn near 3 years or something like that. He back. Like, that adds a lot. I don't feel like these are the same teams that we were watching before. So, like, I don't know how much it matters what I'd seen previously or any of that. I don't know how much it connects to what we're seeing right now. Like, when these playoffs start, I just really don't have any great idea what I'm supposed to think about these teams. None whatsoever. Like, I'm enjoying watching the basketball, but I don't really so much see it. By the way, while I'm on it and talking about basketball that I've been watching under quarantine, I just want to run something at you right quick while I'm thinking about it. So one of these nights I was trying to watch, I forget what game it was, and I had just somehow forgotten that these things would be back on the League Pass. And so I went to NBA TV because I was figuring that they would have the game. And it was not an NBA game on. It was a WNBA game. And I'll be honest with you, I have not watched a lot of the WNBA. I haven't watched anything close to much of WNBA. Like, by and large, the basketball that I watch is the NBA. That's just kind of where it is. I was watching the WNBA, and I got to tell you, man, that was really good. Like, really good. Like, I think, and I've talked to you guys about this before, where I find that football, you can watch mediocre teams play football and it still be an entertaining thing. Basketball doesn't work that way. Like, as the quality of players declined in college basketball and as the players were younger and younger, it just became a lot harder to watch, you know? And I was just like, yo, the NBA is like the height of watching basketball. That's the only level of basketball that I can watch. What I myself personally had greatly underestimated about the WNBA is the skill level of the players and how once we improve the skill level, the questions that you might have about athleticism kind of go out the window. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I like watching people dunk and all that stuff. And I like seeing those incredible physical feats. I do. But that really is just kind of like side stuff. We're watching the NBA. What makes the NBA such an enjoyable product is the high level of skill that the players have. And it's the same thing that's going on right now with the WNBA. Like, I think that a lot of us, the women's basketball that we watch primarily is women's college basketball. And I find that at the top end of women's college basketball, I enjoy watching that, right? Like, you give me a top five matchup in women's college basketball, I'm here for it. You give me the number 15 and the number 22 teams in the country playing against each other. Nah, I don't really enjoy that one so much. I don't so much enjoy that in men's ball either, to be clear, but I don't so much enjoy that. Man, I was watching that WNBA game and I was like, yo, this is what's up. You know, like, I'm not up to speed. I don't fully know who everybody is and all this stuff, but I was like, yo, this is a really enjoyable product, right? And I'm not one of these people that's telling you this because I want to demonstrate to you that I'm down for the cause, right? Like, I don't think being down for the cause requires me to watch women's basketball. I don't have to. You know what I mean? And I ain't really so much one that's trying to impress you with my bona fides in such a way. Like, I'm not that guy. This was just really good basketball, man. Check it out. Now back to this other league, the NBA, the other one that's playing in Florida right now. I need to look right now and see the standings and get an idea. I told you, I don't even fully understand. Like, they talking about play-in games and stuff like that. I really don't have much of an idea how any of that stuff is working. I did not bother to learn any of the particulars of what bubble basketball was going to be. Nah, I mean, come on, man. For what? For what? Again, I didn't think this was even going to happen. Now I ain't got time to catch up. Sorry, it happens. But I started looking at, like, what playoff series are that I myself might want to see. Hey, man, we got a possibility of getting Denver and Utah. I like the idea of getting Denver and Utah because I think Denver will beat Utah. Right? Denver is, like, scary pretty good right now. Like, I feel like that's one that isn't being talked about enough. Like, again, we won't talk about a team that feels like they just got new people Denver showed up and Michael Porter Jr. can play more and he can ball. And then the homie Bol Bol, who, you know, came out of like, what's that dude's name? Dr. Xavier? Like, he seemed like he'd been kicking it with that cat. I watched Denver and I'm like, does anybody have more good players on their roster in the NBA than Denver? Like, we can keep getting Denver through this. This could wind up being fun. I don't know if, like, quote unquote, regular people are going to watch it, but this could be a hoop. We talk about the possibility of the Rockets and the Thunder playing a playoff series. That's one of those where people talked about the teams staying in the same hotel. Yeah, yeah. Rockets Clippers, Rockets Thunder, rather. Same hotel, which also means Russell Westbrook against the Thunder in the playoffs, which could wind up being interesting. We got a lot going on in this bubble. Bubble, I think, has things that we should be interested in. And again, the thing I am most interested in the bubble is, how do we get somebody to fight? There's got to be a way. Like, I feel like this. If the Rockets and the Thunder are going to play in a playoff series, Chris Paul played for the Rockets last year, you know, the Russell Westbrook trade. You know, don't everybody really enjoy hanging out with Chris Paul? And I ain't just talking about James Harden. I'm talking about across the board. Chris Paul seems to be a little difficult for a lot of people to kick it with, right? There's got to be somebody on the Rockets that want to fight him. There has to be. 7-game series and y'all are staying in the same hotel. Can we start taking bets on who's going to be the first person to take a swing on Chris Paul? I don't think it'll be PJ Tucker because, like, the whole North Carolina thing, them boys kind of go back. You know what I'm saying? Like, they play. Oh, who knows? They actually played in high school around the same time. It is actually quite possible that these gentlemen simply don't like each other. You think PJ got it in them? I'd love to find out. Would you love to find out? I'd love to find out. Okay, so we are now in the second week of August, and I imagine that this kind of thing happens always in the second week of August, which is Hard Knocks back. Am I the only person that had not given any consideration whatsoever to Hard Knocks? Like, again, these are things I have not paid very close attention to because I'm not so sure that any of this is going to matter in a week and a half. But there is Hard Knocks. It is coming on. As we speak, let me look up and remember who Hard... That's right. Hard Knocks is the L.A. edition because they're supposed to still move into that stadium. I'm assuming they finished that stadium. I honestly can't remember. Remember they was building that stadium and, you know, the Rona hit. It's going to have an effect on things. So anyway, they're doing the Hard Knock with the Chargers and the Rams. They're doing both of them. And I think we're going to learn a whole lot about how the NFL sees this virus based on the way that they chop up Hard Knocks. Okay? Because I feel like you really can't do anything close to being an honest documentary about an NFL team at this point. If it doesn't have a lot of like real candid, sincere discussions about COVID, like there's room for this to be really, really fascinating if they want to. You're not going to convince me that there aren't some coaches who right now are petrified about the way that this is all going to go. You're not going to tell me that there aren't players who, in spite of the fact that they're playing, are not petrified about the way that this is going to go. Now, I don't know how many of them cats would be willing to like admit that out loud, but it's there. It's real. Like if I told you that someone was doing a documentary about an NFL team through this, but it wasn't Hard Knocks, right? Like it wasn't something that was in effect being done by the league. If I told you about that, I think that you would be totally engrossed by the idea that we could get a real glimpse into what's going on. I do not reasonably expect that HBO and the NFL are going to give us that real glimpse into what's going on with the team. And that really is kind of tragic because this is something, man. Like this is hearing from players could be quite revelatory. Now, I don't know what's going to happen as this proceeds for the NFL. I don't know if we're going to wind up in a place like we've seen with baseball where you got like the Cardinals right now and don't nobody even know like when the Cardinals are going to play again because they wound up with that outbreak and everything that came with it and all these teams that we've seen get yanked back and stuff like that. Like if you wind up with a situation like that on Hard Knocks, I mean, granted, we're not in the season right now, but you know what I mean, right? Like we wind up with something at Hard Knocks and everybody around there is catching it. Like, what are they going to do? How are they going to show it? Like, I want to see that. I am very interested in seeing how it is that the league is going to handle these things. Like, I feel like if there's ever been a time for the NFL that they did not want the publicity, this would probably be the time. Unless the league feels so good about its protocols that it can't wait to show them off. That's hard for me to believe that the league feels so good about its protocols, because I feel like if they did, it wouldn't have taken so long to get them protocols figured out, right? Like, I feel like the NBA right now, if you wanted to do a documentary on the bubble, they would love nothing more than to show you everything they've done to try to make sure to keep everybody safe. Nothing more, right? They got reason to feel great about what it is that they have managed to pull off. They have great reason to feel great things about that. I don't necessarily know if the NFL quite feels that way about their situation, but I'm down to check it out. The Chargers got to be like, man, how many people in Los Angeles have HBO? I sure hope those people know that we have a team. Like, the argument that everybody loves football, the counter argument is the Chargers. Chargers moved to Los Angeles and can't get 30,000 of their own fans into the building, right? And it's hard for me. Like, and what the craziest part about that for me, about the Chargers and their difficulty to build a fan base in Los Angeles, what's so wild about that to me is the Chargers have been the team closest to Los Angeles, or they were, for over 20 years. Like, I lived in Southern California. You got Chargers games on TV all the time. There is a whole generation of people who grew up in Los Angeles with the Chargers being the team to be most likely on the television in their city. And they ain't got no fans. Like, that will never stop being the strangest thing in the world to me, that they could not get any fans in that time period. That's so wild. And so they're up there in L.A. and nobody's paying attention to them. And I imagine there might be somebody in Los Angeles who's just flipping channels or goes to HBO and be like, guys, did you know that L.A. got another football team? No, not the Rams. There's another one, the Lightnings. No, that's what they called. Chargers. Okay. Yeah, how long have they been here? What are they used to be? Oh, who knew? Who knew? Them dudes are just there. Like, it's the wildest thing. Like, anybody who believes that we can just drop an NFL team off anywhere and everybody's just going to be happy because we got an NFL team in this space. Nah. The Chargers are like, nah, it's a little harder to sell this than you think. Just a wee bit. So, yeah, I'm down to watch. I'm down to see it. I mean, we also got, like, another list, I guess, we could come up with, like, you know, like, other teams that we would want to see on the Hard Knocks. I would love to see, like, Hard Knocks with the Texans. Whole bunch of dudes who don't think their coach is any good. Like, that's what I'm here for, right? And that never actually comes up. Like, I want the Hard Knocks where the dudes are so tired of the coach that they not even pretending in front of the cameras. That's the Hard Knocks that I want to see. Or, like, let's mess around. This would have been a great year for, like, the Hard Knocks with the Washington football team, just so we could do something with Jack Del Rio. I don't know if you've seen. He one of them dudes that tweet like a bot. And they asked him about what he thought about this virus, and he said he had some views that he can't bring to work. And I'm like, we already know, dog. Like, with all due respect, we are all perfectly aware of your get down when it comes to the world. Like, do people know that you can see their likes on Twitter? Like, this is something I've never been, like, certain of. Do people know that you can see their likes? That's why I'm looking at Jack Del Rio. Like, now you can go ahead and tell us. 100%. You can go ahead and do that. It's cool. Any other team that we want to see? Anybody else that we feel like this one would be? I mean, like the Cowboys. I mean, that would always be a bit of a hoot, just generally speaking, seeing how that goes. Too bad the Patriots will never be, like, sorry enough for us to see them on Hard Knocks, because Cam Newton comes to Boston. In fact, I don't even want a Hard Knocks with the Patriots. I want Cam Newton, Hard Knocks, Boston, or, like, Hard Knocks, New England. Let's call it that. Hard Knocks, New England. I just want to see Cam Newton go places. That's it. I want to hear people talk to Cam Newton and Cam Newton try to figure out what the hell they're saying while Cam Newton talks to them. and they don't even really know what's going on there. Like, that's going to be one of them situations. Like, the first time that I went to London. So I flew to London. I left at like 8 o'clock p.m. or something like that Eastern time. I landed over there like 7 o'clock their time, but I've been sleep on the plane or whatever. And I just remember I got to the desk at the hotel and I asked the lady, I didn't ask her anything, in fact. She's just running through all the stuff for the room and she's trying to explain to me how to get to the elevator. And she's talking and I don't do a British accent, so I'm not even going to try. And so she keeps going, and she says something about the lift around the corner and everything else. And it was the wildest thing, man, because it was like I was speaking English. She was speaking English, but we wasn't speaking the same language. Like, we just weren't. And like, gradually I figured out, oh, okay, she was telling me how to get to the elevator and it all kind of sank in. But I don't even think I fully realized that until I was three steps away. In fact, what I did was I just followed the directions that she gave me and figured that while I was there, I would figure out what she was talking about. And what do you know? There was the lift. Who knew? Who knew? Anyway, that's what I feel like it's going to be like when Cam Newton is just going around like trying to order stuff while he's up there. How's this going to go the first time Cam wants some collards? You know, Cam like collards. Cam likes to talk about collards a lot. I don't really have no indication if like Cam can make his own collards. I don't know if he's in a situation right now. Well, I mean, maybe he hiring somebody in there to cook collards. I don't really know. I don't know. I mean, I guess he'd have, if he had a chef, he need to fly his chef up. Kind of chef he looking for, I feel very confident it's not going to be anywhere near Foxborough. I just don't see it. I could be wrong. You know what I mean? But I just don't see what that is. But I don't know. I mean, how one of y'all out here? Anybody? How easy is it to find collards out there in like the suburban New England situation? Oh, I forgot. Didn't we go through a phase? Superfood. Like, didn't white folks discover collard greens not that long ago? Like, didn't that happen? I feel like it did happen. So maybe Cam is in a situation where he can like do all that stuff. Now, I don't know if Cam is into this necessarily, but if he's looking for like some Tony Chachere, I don't feel like he's going to be able to pull that off. Right? Maybe I'm the one that's tripping. Maybe I'm getting it wrong. That's what I'm saying. Just a documentary of a camera following Cam Newton around as he does stuff. You know, and don't even tell him that it's happening. Like, somehow find a way to do this with some of this surveillance state shit. You know what I mean? Like, let him go around and do it so he's just being spied on, because I don't want him playing it up for the camera. I just want to have a whole lot of people looking at each other. Like, you know how it goes with people when they start talking to somebody and the person they talking to don't know the language no more? I mean, doesn't know the language. And so they somehow think that the way that they're going to pull it off is to talk louder. Like, I feel like that'll happen with Cam and talking to the Boston folks. Like, that will be the means of communication. Everybody just going to be talking loud. I'll watch. I swear. I'll watch every minute.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Pamani, this first story comes from travel.
Hi, this is Lori Barati with Travel Pulse. Last week, the United Arab Emirates state of Dubai declared itself the first in the world to officially deploy specially trained detection dogs in airports to sniff out the COVID virus in passengers. Other nations have already been conducting their own research and testing in the application of sniffer dogs to detect the coronavirus infection through human scent, but none have made it quite as far. Specially trained police dogs have been set up at Dubai's airport to screen passengers using scent samples obtained by swabbing an armpit. No direct contact is needed between the subject and the dog or its handlers. Instead, samples are taken and placed in containers inside of an isolated room for the canine officers to sniff, and they're said to determine within seconds whether the person has been infected with the virus. Dubai's Ministry of Interior released a statement saying that the dog's overall accuracy in detecting positive COVID cases was approximately 92%. It's far from the first time that sniffer dogs have been employed in early detection of diseases inside the human body. Such highly trained dogs have already been widely and effectively used to smell out diabetes, cancer, tuberculosis, malaria, and Parkinson's disease by identifying chemical changes in the body that create certain scents on the skin. Also, as of August 1st, both Dubai airports require all passengers to get pre-tested for COVID before traveling, carrying with them a certificate of their negative results from a test taken a maximum of 96 hours prior to their departure. People who are coming from high-risk areas or who seem to display symptoms may also be required to retest upon arrival or return in Dubai.
So, like, how I get me one of them dogs? Anybody know how much they cost? Are those dogs cuddly? Because, I mean, that dog sounds like a great idea. Like, if I could just have a dog and everywhere I go, I walk around and that dog can sniff out who got the cooties, dude, that would change my whole life. It'd be all kind of like, if I could just walk in a room and be like, all right, who got it? And we can just clear that thing out. Like, I really don't understand. Like, if y'all trying to get nightclubs back open and bars and stuff like that, why don't you get them dogs right there at the door? And the dog sniff you out and you got the cooties. All right, you out of here, right? Y'all can get back to living reckless again. If we just get these dogs in the street, I feel like a dog ain't that expensive. I don't, you know, I'm kind of curious what the cooties smell like. Like, I understand the dogs have, like, you know, next level smelling and stuff like that. But, you know, I wonder what it does smell like to them when they smell the cooties. But, hey, man, let me get one. Like, if you can get an adorable dog in some sort of fashion and he got that, yeah, I'll turn into a dog owner. No question. Get a little corner over here. Everything else, I'll be doing the world a favor if I can get one of these. And I also guarantee you this, too. It's rich folks out here that got them. It's rich folks out here that already have a dog that is equipped with cootie detection. Ain't about to get them sick. Hell no. I do kind of feel like, though, and I could be wrong, every time I see a dog that's designed for sniffing, like when I'm at the airport or the times I've seen them deployed on other people's cars, them ain't never like cute dogs or dogs that you feel like taking home in any sort of way. It's like they go to the scrap heap of dogs to turn them into that. Like, it, one could argue that it's very similar in some other ways to other elements of law enforcement. People who have not been treated well in their lives suddenly get a measure of power, and now they want to go just mess with people and send them to jail. That's not every member of law enforcement, as I imagine that it is not every dog that works for law enforcement. But I imagine that you can see the parallel that I am describing, as we all went to high school with somebody who became police.
All right, this next story comes from health.
This is David Cayley at NBCNews.com. Thank you for having me on your pod. I trust you've been wearing your mask, keeping social distance, and working productively from home. Now, I don't know if your bosses have been asking you what you've been wearing while you've been working from home, but if you were an online student at Springfield Public Schools in Central Illinois, we know this. You would not be wearing pajama pants during online classes. The pajama monitor would lay down the law. That's because last week, Springfield's Board of Education approved the annual student manual. It's chock full of all the do's and don'ts about conduct and dress codes, all boilerplate stuff. But the one line that caught some eyes was on page 19 out of 90, which said that all dress codes that would be enforced during in-person classes would also be enforced during online classes. And when school starts on August 31st in Springfield, it'll be a hybrid of online and in-person. This all stems from summer school in Springfield, when apparently some middle schoolers were not appropriately attired for online learning, whatever that was. The district wouldn't elaborate. But whatever it was, it was enough for the school board to dictate that any online students this fall better be out of bed, sitting at a table, and most of all, not wearing pajama pants. Now, the risk of playing the both sides card here, I kind of see both sides. I'm not saying that you can't score a 1600 in your PJs, but maybe putting on real pants could be a step toward taking your education seriously. But on the other hand, there's such a horrific digital divide in our nation. There are so many kids, through no fault of their own, who don't have the basic tools to do online learning. Do we really want to erect one more obstacle? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I am team get dressed for work. Nah, man, I don't, like, I saw so many people who push back on this and be like, good luck enforcing that one. Come on, man, get dressed. Like, I know for me personally, I can't speak for the rest of y'all, right? But I can say for myself personally that in this first week or so when we had this situation, I was just laying around in my pajamas, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? I was doing all those things. I felt a lot more like a person when I started, like, getting up and taking a shower and getting dressed in some form or fashion before I started doing things. Like, I do think that it's like, it's not going to be easy to get kids to take seriously what they're doing if you just got them running around in pajamas. Like, that's what it seems like to me. I don't see any research on this. If you got a different argument as a teacher, that's kind of sort of what it is. But I feel like it's really kind of sad that it's the school that has to put this in rather than the parents. Yo, make your kids get dressed. Like my man said there, David Lee, where he says, you know, with the digital divide, do we want to create another obstacle? Putting on clothes, I don't really feel like counts as an obstacle. I just don't, right? I feel like you can go ahead, just get dressed and do your cool school stuff and then change into your play clothes. And like I say, I don't feel like people should be getting like dressed up in suits and ties for Zooms necessarily, right? Like, I'm not talking about anything like that. But no, I got no problem with a school saying, no, you shouldn't be showing up here in pajamas. Because let me tell you who else I don't think should be showing up in pajamas. The teacher. Would you take the teacher seriously? Showing up in some pajamas? You know what I mean? Nah, you wouldn't. If you're the kids, you would not do that. So no, just get dressed. Like you ain't got to do a whole lot. But no, I understand a no pajama rule under those circumstances. Got to keep them in some kind of habit.
All right, this last story also comes from Health.
Hey now, this is Joseph Curl with the Daily Wire. With some colleges set to reopen again for the fall semester, because of course you got to sell those $300 textbooks, the University of Georgia issued a pamphlet on COVID-19 considerations for its returning students. In the pamphlet, administrators say that students should, quote, consider wearing a face mask during sex because, quote, heavy breathing and panting can further spread the virus and wearing a mask can reduce that risk. The pamphlet also suggested that students should be, quote, creative with sexual positions, unquote, to reduce face-to-face contact. And not that many male students needed to be told this who are attending college, the pamphlet suggested that masturbation is one of the safest options amid the pandemic. You are your safest sex partner, says the pamphlet. Practice solo sex or limit the number of sexual partners you have, which again, for many college students, is not a big problem. It's not the first time a college has given such advice. In June, a study from researchers at Harvard University said that in order to prevent transmitting COVID-19 from one person to another, both people should be wearing a mask while having sex.
First of all, I said, you know, my man was like, something about men knowing this and masturbation. Like, what women? I just don't feel like that was that gender specific. They sell appliances for this, you know. Just a thought. Anyway, I thought that this was remarkably progressive for a Southern state institution to be so honest about the fact that students on campus were having sex and to suggest to them that maybe they should try some levels of alternative positions. I did not see that coming. I don't really know, like, A, how many people are going to be adhering to what they're talking about there. Well, I mean, actually, no, there will be lots of people who adhere to it. I just don't know if they're going to adhere to it in the name of COVID. I think they won't try stuff, right? Is that part. The other one, and maybe I'm wrong here, right? I don't know. But I feel like once you decide to have sex with somebody, y'all have just kind of said, maybe COVID, maybe not. If you got it, I got it. If I got it, you got it. We in this thing together. However, I'm speaking like from the standpoint of a grown-up. I don't know how far out these youngsters are thinking this thing here. And one thing that we've learned, everybody I talk to that's got teenagers or college students, people in their early 20s in their lives, man, yo, they out here acting like they ain't got nothing to worry about. I done heard too many stories about too many people that have had to tell their children that they can't come in their houses because they out here living too reckless. Just flat out living too reckless, you know? And that's why, man, good luck when all this stuff come back to college, man. Good luck. Good luck. To everybody. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, for the voicemail segment today, Bomani, we had a listener tweet at us about the time when someone owed you money, a lot of money, a little bit of money, owed you something, and you had to go to links to retrieve it. We got some good ones. Our first, the guy didn't leave his name, but it was a good one.
What's up, Bo? Coming out of, I was living in California at the time, and my landlord had some flying ants in my room. So he let me out of my lease to go ahead and move somewhere else because he couldn't get rid of them and he wouldn't pay for the extermination because it was going to cost too much. He had my deposit. Deposit was $300. I was supposed to be going home flying to Chicago for a week. He said he didn't have the money. So I said, okay, have it for me when I get back. Got back, still didn't have the money. He said, wait till my next payday. Text him 2 weeks later, still didn't have the money. Text him a couple weeks later, then he stopped answering the text. So I said, okay, you must think I'm soft. So went over there at about 10:30 at night when I knew he'd be home. Saw his car outside, got my bat. My bat from outside the trunk. Still came to the door, didn't have it, you know, up where he could see it, you know, like I was going to threaten him with it. But I had it right at my leg, just so he knew I had it. And he got the money. Strangely, real quick, went to the back, said, oh, you know what, I was just about to call you, and came back with the money in hand. Yep, so sometimes that bat changes minds real quick.
I love that the conclusion wasn't that he doesn't have the money. Instead, it was, oh, he thinks I'm soft, right? And I will say this. People from them cities that you've heard of, you know what I mean, in the context that you've heard of, that's the one thing they cannot have is, oh, you think I'm soft. That will have to be corrected. And apparently it was.
All right, this next one, the guy also didn't leave his name, but another good one.
Bo, love the show. Got to tell you about a time where I had to get that money from somebody. Worked in TV production for years in New York City, and I was working with my cousin one day. He's a cameraman. I was doing audio, and a colleague asked us if after our normal work day, we would do something for him and help him with a shoot. So we said, yeah, sure. He said he would pay us in cash after the shoot, and he would pay us half our usual rate. So I was fine with that. It's cash. I said, cool. And I asked him one other time. I said, you're going to pay us cash today, right? Okay, great. After our initial day, which was like 12 hours long, we met up with him. We do this job. We film for another about 5 hours, right? So it's late at night at this point. We're exhausted. But we got the shoot done. Everything went well, right? We leave the location with our colleague, and we're in our truck, and we're driving, and, you know, he's talking with us, and then he's, like, saying goodbye, like, oh, that's my stop right there. I could jump on this train. All right, guys, thanks for your help, and he's about to get out the car. And I'm like, where's the money? And he says, oh, you really want me to go get the money now? I would have to go to the ATM. Bo, I wish you could see my face in that moment of how serious I was when I looked at this man in that truck. Man, we made him go to two different ATMs to get all of the cash to do what he said he was going to do. Whole time he's like, oh, man, you guys got me scared in the car. Oh, you guys are going to beat me up. Oh, you guys are so serious. Oh, you guys must be mob guys or something. I didn't say a word when he said all that. And, like, I know we're all professionals, but maybe I just grew up with different rules about this kind of thing, I guess, obviously. But, man, we had to extort this guy, basically, to get the money that he said he was going to pay us. But he tried to hop on the train real quick. We weren't letting that happen. Anyway, Bo, love the show, man.
Yo, let me just tell something right now to all you guys out there that owe somebody money. Just so you know, right? I would have to go to the ATM is not an excuse that's going to dissuade anybody. Just so you know. Especially not in New York City, where there's an ATM literally on every block, right? It might not be a bank ATM. You might have to go inside the bodega, but there is an ATM literally everywhere in New York City. Everywhere. Oh, man, I would have to go to the ATM. I figured that you would. That's why I'll give you a ride. And you ain't even on foot. Oh, man, I would have to go to the ATM. No, you're going to have to give me my money.
All right, this last one comes from Robert in Michigan.
So the furthest I ever went, it wasn't for me. Like, I wasn't getting my money, but I was helping a buddy get his. I was just there to be muscle. I'm a big dude, so it's just enough to, like the implication was there that something could go down if he wasn't willing to come about them pockets. So go to dude's house, and the guy that's there for his money, we don't bring it up. Go in, he invites us into his place, and we're relaxing, just chilling. He's got his TV on, and then he starts telling us about all this new stuff he's buying. He got himself a new gun, he got himself some new wheels for his truck, all these things. And we're like, oh, really? Cool. Cool, cool, cool. And my buddy's just like, all right, man, this is all great, but you still owe me $800 for helping you get your car out the impound. So where's that at? It's been 3 months. I mean, that's better than most places. They would have already come and just taken the car. But he's smart enough to know he can't take his car, then he can't go to work. So finally, you know, he's confronted with this. He's, oh man, you know, just hit me up next week. I get paid, yada, yada. Nah. Day's over. We got to go get this money. And it's as simple as that. So all this stuff he had just been showing off to us and just been kind of feeling good about, we load that up in my buddy's truck, took it down to the pawn shop, pawned it for whatever it was worth, took that, and then came back a couple weeks later to get the rest. It was not a good time for him. But yeah. That was like the furthest we ever went to get some money off some folks.
Yo, man, that's that one thing about it. Folks will take merchandise if you ain't got the cash, but there's a discount rate on that. Like, I don't know how you're going to owe somebody money than be in their face showing off all the bread you spending. Like, I ain't here to understand that at all. Wow. Bad play. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassett and Tariqa Foster and everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thank you to Lori Barati of Travel Pulse. Check out her story on COVID-sniffing dogs. Thank you to David K. Lee of NBC News. Check out his story on the restrictions being placed on remote learning, people making your kids change out their pajamas. And thank you to Joseph Curl of The Daily Wire. Check out his story on the sexual restrictions. Well, not restrictions, but suggestions being made to students at the University of Georgia. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.